Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the recent alarming report of the state of the oceans that cover two-thirds of this planet. Sylvia Earle, the National Geographic Explorer in Residence and former chief scientist at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, joins us. We'll examine this latest warning of a mass extinction and look into ways to reverse the drift towards the death of the Earth's oceans. Then we will examine the main culprit behind the looming mass extinction of the ocean and by extension the Earth, and that is overpopulation. The head of the largest grassroots population organization in the United States, Population Connection, formerly Zero Population Growth, John Seeger, joins us. We will look into the future of this planet on which the population has doubled since 1968 and will double again by 2050. Then we will have a conversation with labor historian Jefferson Cowie about the new Gilded Age and the rise of the 21st century plutocracy. He is the author of Staying Alive, the 1970s and the Last Days of the Working Class, and we will look into the possibility of another Teddy Roosevelt emerging from America's political class, locked in the grip of greed, to restore a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I'm now joined by Sylvia Earle, who is the National Geographic Explorer in Residence, the founder of the Mission Blue Foundation and chair of the Advisory Council for the Heart Research Institute for the Gulf of Mexico Studies. She's a former chief scientist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and author of numerous books, including Sea Change, A Message of the Oceans and Ocean, an Illustrated Atlas. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sylvia Earle.
Well, thank you. Nice to be on board.
The international program on the state of the oceans, IPSO, are apparently releasing a report very soon, but it's already been leaked. And apparently this report says that the oceans are in worse state than previously suspected, and that where ocean life is at a high risk of entering a phase of extinction of marine species unprecedented in human history. Could you give us your assessment of what this report is telling us?
I haven't seen the report yet, of course, because it hasn't come out, but I can say for sure that this is not new news to scientists who've been studying the ocean in recent years. What's really dramatic is that people have been oblivious to it. We go to the supermarket and restaurants, and we see a great variety of ocean wildlife and think that everything must be fine out there because, look, you know, you've got 10 or 12 different variations on the theme of lobsters and clams and oysters and shrimp and fish, any number of different kinds of fish. None of them, or rarely are you seeing fish that we've had anything to do with actually bringing into existence as there would be for cows, pigs, and chickens. This is all wildlife, and the decline in recent decades has been swift and sharp. In 50 years since I was a kid, the loss of many of the creatures people take for granted that will always be there, tunas, swordfish, sharks, groupers, snappers, cod, the big flounders of various variations on the theme, they're all hammered. The thing that most people don't seem to appreciate is these are not just yearlings. They don't just come back in a season the way chickens can be raised in a few months. Cows, pigs may take a year, but it takes maybe a decade for a bluefin tuna to mature, let alone be taken to market. Some fish that we take out of the sea that we often see now in markets, the Chilean sea bass, may be 50 or 80 or 100 years old. Orange ruffy can live for two centuries. They might have been hatched at the time of the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and we can do them in 20 minutes with lemon slices and butter. It's not working, the taking of large quantities of wildlife, and we've been a little bit slow to catch up on the reality. So extinction, a real possibility for a number of shark species. Extinction of ecosystems, because the method for gathering ocean wildlife can be really destructive. The trawls that drag the ocean floor, it's like using a bulldozer to catch squirrels and songbirds. You throw away most of what you catch and keep a handful. And that leaves behind this, these great swaths of destruction. And it's been happening for a long time, but the pace has picked up since post-World War II. New technologies make it possible to find fish, to go further offshore, to deploy using new materials that are lightweight, relatively inexpensive, the plastic materials that make the basis of many of the nets and long lines that are now being used. It's almost as if we're waging war on the ocean using these modern technologies, all with the best of intentions. Let's feed people, or let's make money, or whatever, but without realizing what the scientists who have released this recent report are telling us. This is serious business. This can't go on. And the consequences are not just, I might not have my favorite fish to eat, if you know what that fish really is, but we're disrupting the underpinnings of what keeps the world functioning, what keeps us alive. So I think that's the big revelation, the connecting of the dots out there to show this is not about food. This is not about a way of life. This is serious business of destroying the systems that maintain the nature of the planet in a way that's suitable for us. The carbon cycle, the nitrogen cycle, the oxygen cycle, the water cycle, all anchored in a healthy ocean. But we have really seriously disrupted in a few decades.
Again, I'm speaking with the former chief scientist of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Sylvia Earle. We're talking about a new report by the International Program on the State of the Ocean, IPSO, which is coming out soon. And I take it that there have been, five mass extinctions in history, in the history of the planet, and this is what this report suggests, that we're two-thirds of the planet is, in fact, facing a mass extinction here, and it's a combination of ocean acidification, global warming, local pollution, and overfishing. Is that
right?
Those are the four horsemen of the apocalypse there.
But there's plenty of reason for hope, and that's the flip side. You know, we haven't lost all the sharks yet. About 10% of the sharks that were there when I was a kid are still there. I mean, and of course sharks do reproduce, but they don't reproduce fast enough to keep up with the growing demand for shark fin soup, the macho meal that people order when they go to say, I want a mako steak, or whatever the reason. Some people just kill sharks because they think it's good for the ocean to get rid of the sharks. Now we know the ocean actually requires all of the pieces to be there to be a healthy operating system. None of it is really superfluous. And all of it is part of what makes the world hospitable for us. So this new report is one of those legendary wake-up calls. It's the big 2x4. Look, this is what's happening. Look, these are the consequences. But here are some things that you can do. We need to think about what the carbon dioxide that we're putting into the atmosphere. So reducing emissions is not only important for global warming and climate change, it's critically important for this new trend in the sea, changing the chemistry of the ocean through acidification, excess carbon dioxide turning to carbonic acid. Bad news for fish, bad news for us too. The other actions that are being recommended are fisheries reform. These destructive trawls, we have to rethink how much wildlife can we really extract from the ocean and still have wildlife there. And some of the methods being used are so destructive, they just should stop. The use of trawls. If we did it on the land to catch our groceries, people would be up in arms. They'd say, this can't be. It's just too destructive and too wasteful.
Well, I take it, though, Zubriel, that the basic recommendations of this new report are we have to stop the exploitation of fish now, as of right now.
Seriously, rethink
right
how much we can take and what we
how we can restore.
We have to stop eating fish, but we certainly need to think about this, where these creatures have come from, and to the extent that you do consume them, eat them with great respect.
Right.
And know where they came from. I can't do it. I can't eat any of these creatures because I know too much. I know what it takes to make a tuna, a lobster, a clam, and I know they're in trouble. That means we're in trouble. So if I can just give them a break, I'll be giving us a break.
Well, the other recommendation is we've got to make immediate and sharp reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, and
That's
then
right.
We've got to stop the agricultural fertilizers and human waste polluting the ocean. And more importantly, we've got to reduce the plastic. I understand there's a great gyre in the middle of the Pacific Ocean churning around.
And the Indian Ocean. I mean, it's not just the Pacific.
And it's full of plastic garbage that's all sort of coagulated. Is that how it
did? Well, I come from the pre-plasticozoic era. I mean, I know the world can do without plastic. I love the convenience of plastic. It's the one-time use plastics that have just become such a burden that you use the thing once and you throw it away, but there is no away. And as is recorded in a song that Jackson Brown has recently composed, every bit of plastic ever made is still here. It's a big thought. Every plastic bag, every cup, every spoon, they're still here as long as they've been making them. They may not be there in their full size and weight. They break up into small pieces eventually, but they, right down to the molecular level, they maintain their integrity as plastic. That means that they get engulfed by smaller and smaller things that are eaten by larger things, and so they get incorporated through the food chain into the chemistry of life. One thing that this report does certainly focus on, the good news part, that there is time, not a lot, but it's not over. We can take measures that will make a difference. We haven't lost all the coral reefs. Only about half are either gone or in a state of decline in the last few decades. That means about half of them are still in pretty good shape. And we still have a few tunas. They aren't all gone yet. But I think one of the things that this report warns us that if we continue doing what we're doing, we will lose these individual species and entire ecosystems at our peril, because they're the nuts, the bolts, the cogs, the wheels, as Aldo Leopold, a famous ecologist, has said, that hold the world together, and it's our world. We need these places. So networks of protected areas like national parks that protect watersheds, or policies that in an overarching sense say, show respect for sharks, don't kill sharks. There's no reason why, for any reason, unless they're about to eat you, why we should ever kill a shark. They're much more valuable alive than dead. And people need to understand why that is so. They aren't out to get us. They're not our enemy. I used to worry about man-eating sharks when people first began diving in the ocean, when I first began diving. Now we have to worry about man-eating sharks. Once in a while, a shark will take a bite out of one of us once or twice a year because we probably are asking for trouble, putting ourselves in harm's way. But when you think that last year alone, the estimate is something like 100 million sharks were killed for shark fin soup and for other purposes that were not natural. Let's go kill some sharks. Let's have a shark derby.
It's such a disgrace. But just in closing, Sylvia Earle, is there anything that can be done about these great gyres of plastic that have coagulated in the middle of the Pacific and the Indian Ocean?
Well, the first thing is to stop at the source. Don't let them get any bigger. And then every chance you get, do what a lot of little kids do, a lot of big kids too. When it comes ashore, pick it up. When you're out in a boat, don't add to the problem. And do what we can. It's a challenge. It's a big problem. How do you retrieve these tiny fragments that now clog the oceans of the world? Gradually, over time, these systems will accommodate whatever is there, for better or for worse. But we should do everything we can not to make the problem any bigger. That certainly should be the first giant step.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Sylvia Earle, again, the former chief scientist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and now National Geographic's Explorer in Residence. Again, thank you, Sylvia.
I thank you for having me on board.
Bye-bye. Let's now take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the main culprit behind the death of the oceans.
So I started this song with Sylvia Earle in the Galapagos Island and finished it last night, having talked to Sylvia Earle in Hollywood at the Mission Blue party. They say nothing lasts forever, but all the plastic ever made is still here. No amount of closing our eyes will make it disappear.